The American bishops are in the midst of a massive and expensive multi-year project of Eucharistic revival. What are the goals of this project and what are its chances of success? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Well, as I always do, I want to encourage you to smash that like button. I cringe every time I say that, I admit it. Also to subscribe, but don't notify. Okay, got that out of the way. Follow Crisis Magazine on all the different social media channels, at Crisis Mag. You can also follow me on Twitter, where I'm most active. That's at Eric R. Sammons. But Crisis is on all the various social media channels, at Crisis Mag. You can watch this video on YouTube, Odyssey, Twitter, Facebook. Also, it's available on all your various podcast channels, so make sure you subscribe there. Okay, so today I want to talk about what the ongoing Eucharistic revival. You might not have known it was going on, or maybe you did. It started back in June, and it's a three-year project. And so it basically, the revival initiative, here, let me see this. The Eucharistic revival is a three-year initiative that aims to inspire, educate, and unite. In a world where not many people know Jesus intimately, the revival is meant to show everyone what wonders the true presence of Jesus can do to heal the soul. Through a carefully planned timeline of events, after 3 years, the U.S. bishops hope to change the lives of many Catholics and non-Catholics alike. The initiative is going to include development of new teaching materials, training for diocesan and parish leaders, the launch of a dedicated revival website, which has already happened, and the deployment of a special team of 50 priests who will travel the country to preach about the Eucharist. Now, before we go too much into this, I want to give the bishops themselves a chance to kind of explain this. I'm going to show this video here, and this is Bishop Andrew Cousins, the chairman of the Committee on Evangelization and Catechesis. He's basically in charge of this initiative, I believe, and he describes what's going on. So let me go ahead and pull this up.
Brothers and sisters, welcome to the Eucharistic Revival. It's our mission to renew the church by enkindling in God's people a living relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ in the Holy Eucharist. We want everyone to encounter the love of Jesus Christ truly present in the Eucharist and to experiencing the life-changing effects of that love. We want to see a movement of Catholics across the United States that are healed, converted, formed, and unified by an encounter with Jesus Christ in the Eucharist and then sent out on mission for the life of the world. Our goal is to empower you and your organization so that you can participate in this Eucharistic revival, which is central to the mission of the church in the United States right now. We want to help you first revive your own faith in Jesus' presence in the Eucharist and come to a deeper understanding of what the Eucharist can be in your own life. And then we want to help you to form the groups that you're a part of, your parish, in order to be able to enliven the faith of the Eucharist in those people.
Okay, I'll stop it there. We don't have to listen to it all, but you get the general sense of what the USCCB, what the American bishops are talking about when they're talking about this Eucharistic revival. The four terms that Bishop Cousins used was healed, converted, formed, and unified. I think that's an interesting, I think that's good in a lot of ways. I will say that if you look at the website and you look at what they say, there's a lot of emphasis on the healing aspect, which I'll be honest, makes me a little bit nervous. It's very traditional in the early church talk about Christ as a divine physician who heals us. So I'm not saying that that language in and of itself is wrong. The problem is in modern parlance, that often is talking about like therapeutic healing. You hear this a lot in like social justice causes, like for example, Black Lives Matter and things like that, where they talk about we need to heal our society, things like that. So obviously, what do we mean? And this is where the rubber always meets the road. What do we mean when we talk about healing, for example? Do we mean healing in Jesus Christ, in which we find our fullness in him? Or do we mean some type of human kind of healing, which may or may not be consistent with the teachings of the church? But obviously converted, formed, and unified is also important. The unified is a little bit ironic, which we'll talk about in a little bit, considering what the Pope was trying to do to unify us. So basically the structure of the Eucharistic revival is this. It started, like I said, back in at the Feast of Corpus Christi, June of this year, 2022. And the first year is what they call the diocesan year. And so the focus is at the diocesan level. The second year, so starting 2023 through 2024, is the parish year. And then in 2024, there's going to be a probably massive Eucharistic Congress held in Indianapolis, Indiana, not too far from where I live. And it will be a Eucharistic Congress, which I don't think there's been a national Eucharistic Congress like this. I think I saw the last one was 1972 or something like that. It's been a long time. I know that. It's going to cost $28 million for that Congress, to hold that Congress is the figures I heard. And of course, there'll be costs involved with the whole multi-year revival. So the year after, the final year after the Congress is, I think, going out and proclaiming what's been learned over the previous 2 years. So as you can tell, this is a big deal. This is something that the United States Congress Catholic bishops have put a lot of effort into, a lot of time and resources into, and they're going to be spending a lot of time and resources. So like I said, $28 million for the Eucharistic Congress alone, plus all the materials they're creating, the website, the 50 priests they're sending out, the parish life, all this stuff. So a lot of time and resources are being done for this. And I want to be clear about something. I honestly believe that most of the bishops sincerely want this revival. Now, I don't say all, because I actually do think there are a handful of bishops that are, to use the best word, wicked. And so I don't actually think they care about it. But I think most bishops in America, when you say, if you ask them, do you want Catholics to believe in the real presence of the Eucharist? Do you want them to have a devotion to the Blessed Sacrament? They would say, yes, absolutely, I do. And so I do think that sincerely that most bishops want this. And I think they know the reality. And that is that about 70% of Catholics do not believe in the real presence. They do not believe that the Blessed Sacrament is truly the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ. And so they want to change those numbers. And of course, they know that so many people are leaving the Catholic Church. We have millions leave each year. The latest numbers are never good when it comes to mass attendance, when it comes to infant baptisms, when it comes to just a practice of the faith. And I think that most of these bishops, they see this Eucharistic revival as an effort to try to slow those trends, to maybe even reverse them. Get Catholics to believe in the Blessed Sacrament, in the real presence of the Blessed Sacrament. Get Catholics attending Mass again. Get Catholics baptized, getting their infants baptized. So I do think that that is the case. However, I do think it's necessary that we look at these type of efforts that are spending a lot of our money, remember, because we're the ones who are donating to our parishes, which then goes to the diocese, which then goes to USCCB. And so it's our resources being used, and we should ask ourselves, will these things actually work? Will there be success in the Eucharistic revival? And I would say success probably would be measured in an increase in the number of Catholics who believe in the real presence. So right now it's at 30%, increase to 40, 50%. Obviously it should be 100%. We see maybe a lessening of the decline. Am I even having high expectations? But maybe a lessening of the decline in mass attendance. So if those things, I think, would be a success. But we have to ask ourselves, is this the right way to go about a Eucharistic revival? Will this be successful? And what my biggest fear is that the USCCB, the bishops here, are falling into a very common mistake that's been made for over a generation now in the church. And that comes to an understanding of how the faith is transmitted to the next generation, to others. I talk about this a lot in my book. Where am I pointing at? Yeah, Deadly Indifference. My last book, Deadly Indifference. I talk a lot about this in a chapter or two of that book about how the faith is transmitted. We have this idea, you hear this commonly said, it's a common refrain among practicing Orthodox Catholics, that catechesis is very poor in this country, in the church. that people are not taught the faith well. And that's true on some levels, although I think it's much better than it used to be. That your catechism class at your average parish today, I bet, is way better than it was maybe 30 years ago. And so, but it is still true that catechesis is still poor. But I think a lot of Catholics, when they say that, what they mean is we need to have better teachers. We need to have better materials. And so we need to teach better the faith. But I think they're restricting that just to classroom education and maybe homilies and adult education, whatever the case may be. They're restricting it to just teaching directly. But the fact is that the faith is transmitted by osmosis much more than it is by actually me saying something or somebody else saying something. It's not saying there isn't a place for actual direct catechesis in classrooms, good preaching, good homilies, things like that, good classes, good materials that we hand out. There is a place for that. But that's not primarily how the faith is taught. I give the analogy in my book, Deadly Indifference. I give this analogy. So let's say you're a Yankees fan. Oh, God bless you. I feel sorry for you. But you're a Yankees fan, even though they're good this year. I can't stand the Yankees. But okay, you're a Yankees fan, and you have a son. He's young. The first 5-6 years of his life, you teach him about being a Yankees fan, how you're a Yankees fan. Then all of a sudden, you start taking down your Yankees poster on your wall. You stop wearing a Yankees hat like you used to. You stop watching Yankees. Instead, you start watching the Boston Red Sox. Maybe even you put a Boston Red Sox poster up in your room. You start wearing a Boston Red Sox hat. Your son asks, oh, are we not Yankees fans anymore? Are we Red Sox fans? Oh, no, oh, no, 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 son. We're still Yankees fans. Definitely 100% Yankees fans. Here, I'll give you a book about the Yankees. Yet you still keep watching the Red Sox. You keep wearing that Red Sox hat. You keep your Red Sox poster up on the wall. What do you think your son, as he grows older, as he gets into his teen years, and as he leaves the house, what fan do you think he'll be? Do you think he'll be a Yankees fan? Do you think he'll be a Red Sox fan? Or do you think he maybe not even be a fan of either of them, just not a fan at all? Like, that's ultimately what we're doing in the Catholic Church when it comes to transmitting the faith. We're saying certain things, like everything this Eucharistic Bible will say will probably be good, will probably be fine. So we're saying certain things, but we're doing actions that are completely contrary to what we're saying. We're saying we're Yankees fans, but we're acting like Red Sox fans. And I'm afraid that's going to be the main problem in how in this Eucharistic revival. Because the faith is transmitted, like I said, through osmosis. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is, think about, for example, how the faith was transmitted in the Middle Ages. Do you think there were catechism classes at the local parish where you all had your nice books and you were taught the faith and things like that? Of course not. No, the catechism happened through osmosis. You went to your parish, you saw the statues around you, you saw the stained glass windows, you saw how the Mass was celebrated, you saw how the priests lived, how your fellow Catholics lived, and you learned the faith. That's how you knew what it meant to be a Catholic. That's how you knew what it meant to believe as a Catholic. You simply saw it practiced all around you. You got it, like I said, by osmosis. Yes, there were certain teachings the priest would say during his homily. There were certain teachings you would have at home where your mother would teach you the Our Father. Your dad might show you how to pray the rosary or something like that. All these things would happen. But you didn't have to have classes in order to learn the faith. And right now what we're doing is we're saying we're going to have these classes or these programs or these projects or these rallies or whatever. But that's all we're going to do. We're going to forget about all the other ways the faith is taught. And it's not necessarily like they're trying to not teach the faith through these other ways. It's simply they don't understand how important they are, how important non-teaching opportunities are for actually transmitting the faith. You know, I'm a writer, and one of the things I remember hearing one time when somebody was talking about how to be a good writer is show, don't tell. You show, don't tell. So, for example, if you're trying to market toothpaste, you don't talk about the qualities of toothpaste. You talk about how great it is to have white teeth. You show white teeth. And then the person is going to want to get some toothpaste. And likewise here, we need to show the faith, not simply tell it. Because the truth is, if we just tell it and we don't show it, we're seen to be hypocrites. And people won't actually follow us and people won't believe. If you don't walk the walk, people won't listen as you talk the talk. So what we really need to do is, it needs to be a true Eucharistic revival needs to encompass so much more than just something, just another program. We've had programs ad infinitum, it seems like, over the past 30 years or so. And these programs aren't bad. Some of them are, but in general, a lot of programs are good and they're held by good natured people, sincere Catholics, but they're not enough. And in fact, they won't really accomplish what we want them to accomplish because of the fact that they are undercut by what we see all around us in the church. I, as a lot of you know, I worked for 5 years as a director of evangelization at a Catholic diocese. One of my biggest frustrations was that we would do some program, we would do some event, we'd do some teaching, whatever the case may be, where we'd help people understand the faith. We'd try to bring people closer to faith. But then they would go off, after that was done, they go off to a parish where, frankly, the faith wasn't really lived that much. They go to a mass where, felt banners, the homilies were insipid, the music was terrible. There wasn't really a challenge to live the faith and to believe in Jesus Christ in the Blessed Sacrament. And so I just knew that we'd do these things to get them interested in the faith, and then they'd lose it when they go to their parish because the parish life just didn't really foster what the church teaches. And so we see this all around us. How do we right now, how is the teaching of the Church on the Blessed Sacrament being undercut all around us? Well, we see it, first of all, in how, for example, the Novus Ordo is celebrated. I'm not talking about even abuses. I'm talking about things that were not in Vatican II. Vatican II did not call for these things, but they're the common practice in the Novus Ordo Mass. Number one, of course, communion in the hand. I realize communion in the hand is allowed. I think that's a problem. I realize that a lot of people receive communion in the hand now. However, I do think that's something that undercuts our belief in the Blessed Sacrament. I remember when one of my daughters was in her first communion. She had a retreat, and I went with her. And the teacher talked about how we receive on the hands because we're grown-ups. We don't have to get fed like babies in our mouth. And I was upset. I contacted the parish, all that stuff, took care of it. But then I was talking to my daughter afterwards. I explained to her that, yes, we receive on the tongue because we are like babes. And we are receiving this food that we need to survive. And we can do nothing on our own. There's nothing I can do to earn, to be worthy of this Blessed Sacrament. And so by receiving on the tongue, I actually am, it's a message I'm saying to myself that, oh my goodness, this isn't just any other food. This is the Blessed Sacrament. I don't receive it like other food I do pick up, I eat, I put it in my mouth with my hand. I don't do that with the Blessed Sacrament. Again, this is common though now to receive communion in the hand, but it's not something Vatican II called for. Another one is, of course, the celebrating the Mass versus populum, towards the people. Again, not called for in Vatican II. Yeah, it's very common. In fact, some bishops are now trying to not allow priests even to be allowed to celebrate ad orientum. But this is another thing that kind of sets the Mass apart, and so therefore sets the Eucharist apart as something different, something sacred. The removal of the altar rails, not having altar rails where you receive kneeling. Another thing not called for by Vatican II. Obviously, terrible music. A lot of the music that came in this 1970s. I mean, Vatican II called for giving pride of place to the Gregorian chant. Maybe pride of place was towards Latin, but it talked about Gregorian chant as being important. And so sacred architecture. Oh my gosh. You go to your typical Catholic parish, suburban parish these days. I mean, it looks like a used airline hangar. I mean, it's just not really, there's nothing about that inspires you and thinks, oh my gosh, this is the house of God. This is where our Lord Jesus Christ in the Blessed Sacrament resides. These are ways that we are teaching our kids when we do these things, when we when we have terrible architecture, terrible music, we are receiving communion in the hand. We are the mass is being celebrated versus populum. There are no altar rails. All these things are ways in which people are being taught. It's like the man who's got the Boston Red Sox outfit on, but he tells his kids, we're Yankees fans. It's mixed messaging. It's no wonder so many people leave. I wouldn't be shocked. And so what are some other things that are working against this Eucharistic revival? Well, obviously, the restriction of the traditional Latin Mass is one of them. And you don't even have to be a person who attends a traditional Latin Mass to understand why this is a bad thing. We do know that people who attend the traditional Latin Mass are more likely to believe in the real presence. And so these parishes are thriving parishes often with people who really do believe in the Blessed Sacrament and believe in the real presence in the Blessed Sacrament. Yet they're being shut down. Cardinal Supich, Cardinal Gregory, the bishop in Savannah, Bishop Parks in Savannah. They're doing these things to shut down the traditional Latin Mass. They're shutting down thriving parishes where the Blessed Sacrament is honored. What kind of message does that send? I mean, what are people to think when people who believe in the real presence are having their parishes shut down? That seems to send a pretty strong message. Obviously, I was talking about some certain aspects of the Novus Ordo that weren't called for in Vatican II, but are very common. But what about abuses as well that are so widespread in the celebration of the Novus Ordo? I mean, just yesterday, I mean, I could have said this any day, and this probably would there'd be something I could say. Just yesterday, there was being passed around the priest who celebrated Mass in the water at a beach. He was halfway submerged. He had a floating, some type of floating device that was his altar where he celebrated the Mass. And he was there. He was shirtless, had his swim trunks on. You know, there's women there in bikinis who were there in the congregation there. I mean, Pope Francis, when he wanted to restrict the traditional Latin Mass, he said that he does not like abuses on all sides. But yet, and other bishops will say that, and yet the abuses go on. The abuses go on and on and on. Particularly, they go on in those dioceses where the traditional Latin Mass is being most restricted and where ad orientem is being disallowed. Abuses just happen over and over and over again. If that does not harm...
We'll be back after a quick break.
Playlist shuffled? Check. Drinks on ice? Check. Z-Biotics? Make the most of your time with friends by starting your evening with Z-Biotics, the only pre-alcohol probiotic designed to make those rough mornings after drinking alcohol a thing of the past. Z-Biotics is key for those who live for the moment. Visit ZBiotics.com to learn more.
A belief in the real presence, I don't know what does. To see it taken so cavalierly and not taken seriously, of course then people are going to not believe in the real presence. And so that obviously harms. So restricting the Latin Mass, allowing abuses in the Novus Ordo. Obviously another one, this is a big one, letting pro-abortion politicians receive Holy Communion. And I'm not talking about some dog catcher who happens to be, think he's pro-choice who gets received communion. I'm talking about men and women whose life goal, it seems, to be have the world have as many abortions as possible. I'm talking about Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, people like that. God bless Archbishop Corleone for telling Nancy Pelosi she cannot receive communion. Obviously, she still does. She did at the Vatican. But this message sends a signal. This is a way we teach. When we allow pro-abortion politicians, rabidly pro-abortion politicians, receive Holy Communion, then we are teaching Catholics that we don't really believe this is the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord. That's what we're teaching them. We can say in this document that we believe Jesus Christ is truly present in the Blessed Sacrament. But then if we say, Nancy Pelosi, you're fine to receive communion, Joe Biden, you're a Catholic in good standing, then we undercut what we said in that document. So when bishops say one thing in a document, but then in practice they do something completely contrary to it, what message does that send? And in fact, the document that kind of kicked off this Eucharistic revival is called The Mystery of the Eucharist in the Life of the Church. They punted on the issue of pro-abortion politicians receiving Holy Communion. This would apply also to these politicians who are now pushing to codify same-sex marriage. Marriage, I'll put that in quotes. And so it's the same. That's the same thing. But they punt. The bishops were not willing to stand up and say, pro-abortion politicians, politicians who support same-sex marriage, they should not receive, they cannot receive Holy Communion. And so they undercut their own message. So let's talk. So when we talk about the bishops, you know, there's a few that are terrible. Cardinal Supich, Cardinal Gregory, people like that. There's a few that are great. They do a good job. Bishop Strickland, Archbishop Corleone. But then there's a lot of them who very much support this initiative of Eucharistic revival. And I truly believe they want Catholics to believe in the real presence again. Yet they do nothing about the fact that people like Cardinal Gregory, Cardinal Supich, Pope Francis, let's be honest, don't have a problem with people like Nancy Pelosi receiving Holy Communion. They don't speak out against it. And so their efforts are being undercut. It's like they're hanging on a branch. They're cutting off the branch that they're hanging on. That's what so many are doing. I don't think they realize they're doing it, but that's exactly what they're doing. What are some other ways that the Catholics' belief in the real presence is undercut? The lockdowns. When Mass was shut down as a non-essential service for 2 months back in 2020, that gave a clear message to Catholics and non-Catholics everywhere that we don't really believe that the Holy Sacrifice of Mass, the Blessed Sacrament, is the source and summit of our lives. It's the source and summit of our lives. We cannot survive spiritually without the Mass. Yet, every single bishop, without any exception in this country, banned Catholics from attending the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass for 2 months or more, simply because politicians told them they should do that. Remember, in a lot of those states where Mass was basically public Mass was banned, it wasn't against the law to have Mass. It was simply the bishops decided to go along with the Mass hysteria that was going on back in March of 2020. But that sent a grave message. And in fact, what really bothers me to this day, and I'm thinking about writing an article about this, is I don't think one bishop has apologized for that. Not one has said, we were wrong. We shouldn't have done that. I mean, I understand you made a mistake, a terrible, grave mistake. And honestly, you probably should submit your resignation. You should have submitted your resignation for shutting down Mass. But at least say you're sorry. Because if you don't say you're sorry, you don't realize that you have said publicly with your actions that Mass is a non-essential service. That receiving communion is a non-essential activity. You said that. Yet you want a Eucharistic revival now that says how important the Eucharistic is? Yet the Eucharist is, yet you did that. And of course, the mask mandates are flowed from that. I mean, people trying to go to Mass were harassed. They were yelled at if they didn't wear their mask. I mean, I saw so many priests during that time. They put the physical above the spiritual. They were more concerned about whether or not somebody at Mass was wearing a mask than whether or not they were in a state of mortal sin. You could receive the Eucharist in a public state of mortal sin, no problem. But if you didn't have that piece of cloth over your mouth, oh my goodness, you are not worthy to receive Holy Communion. So I just feel like that we're undercutting the message of the Eucharistic revival. We're continually undercutting it because we don't understand how the faith is transmitted. We don't understand it's by osmosis, not simply by words. We want to make it where if we just say the right words, people will believe. That's not how it works. Jesus Christ himself said great words and converted many, of course, but he backed it up with actions. The apostles did the same thing. They were willing to die for their faith. It wasn't just words. It wasn't just preaching. If you look at the history of the early church, that's how the church grew. It wasn't through preaching primarily. Instead, it was from the live witness of the faith, that they were willing to die for their beliefs. They're willing to serve others for their beliefs. They're willing to live differently than the culture for their beliefs. I mean, a great example is, I've told this story before, I think, about how in the early church, when a plague hit a town, all the pagans left town, all the Christians came in. And they said, and the sick people said, "Why are you doing this?" He said, "Because of Jesus Christ." That's how we're supposed to live. But what we're saying today, our bishops are saying that, and let's be honest, a lot of our lay people are too, are saying, yeah, go ahead and believe in the Eucharist, that's real presence, but we're not going to act like it is in anything we do. Now, I know that it's very predictable when somebody like me criticizes the USCCB and an initiative like this, which has good intentions, that's like, oh, you traditional Catholics are so negative. You Orthodox Catholics, conservative Catholics even, are so negative. You're always criticizing. Why don't you do something to help? The problem, though, is that we are doing something to help. That's why we attend reverent liturgies. That's why we think it's so important to do these things, like go to a Mass where the Blessed Sacrament is actually believed. That's why we do this. That's our positive. But we're being ignored, and not only ignored, we're being told to go away, that you're not really part of the church. The bishops are ignoring what actually works. These things work. We see it in the growth of the traditional Latin Mass. We see it in history, how people come to the faith. And so, but they're ignoring what actually works because they're too controversial. It's too controversial to say we should give communion only on the tongue. It's too controversial to say we should have altar rails. It's too controversial to say ad orientem. Bishops can't say that. I mean, obviously they can, but they're not willing to because it's too controversial. But those things actually would work to make a true Eucharistic revival happen. And so it's not us being negative, just like, okay, let's try to find a reason. I want this Eucharistic revival to succeed. I want there to be Eucharistic revival. The problem is, until we're really serious about it, we're willing to do the controversial things. We're willing to do the things that won't make anybody happy at the cocktail parties in Washington, D.C. or New York City. They won't make the corporate press happy. They might not even make a lot of the bureaucrats in the Vatican happy. Until we're willing to do those things that might be controversial, we're not going to have a true and honest Eucharistic revival. What we need to do, so let's finish this on what should be done. Yes, go ahead and have a Eucharistic Congress. Go ahead and have pamphlets made and programs like that. But ultimately, we need to really emphasize more reverence at Mass. Yes, obviously, I think that means we should have more traditional Latin Masses, but even just more reverence at your Novus Ordo Masses. We don't allow abuses. I mean, I do know of some parishes, they're unfortunately few and far between, that celebrate the Novus Ordo in a very reverent manner, and of course, they're thriving. Of course they are. We need to have more reverence at Mass. We need to take Novus Ordo abuses seriously. We need to deny communion to people in a public state of sin, people like Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, people like that. We need to deny communion to people who are divorced and remarried. And it's not a matter of we're doing it because we think we're better than them. Any of us who are in a state of mortal sin that has not been forgiven in Holy Communion and made a public, if we're publicly sinners, made it public that we repent, should not receive Holy Communion. And that's because of what St. Paul says, that these people are condemning themselves by doing so. We're doing this out of love. That's why we don't want people like that to receive communion. But it also is a message. It's a scandal when they receive. So if we do these actions, if we have reverence at Mass on the one hand, and we have it back up with our public actions of not giving communion just anybody everywhere, but only to those who are in a state of grace, then I think we will have a true Eucharistic revival where people will believe again that Jesus Christ is truly present, body, blood, soul and divinity in the Blessed Sacrament. So, I mean, let's pray for this Eucharistic revival. Honestly, my prayer is going to be that the bishops will step up and recognize that the faith is transmitted through osmosis. And so all the actions that we take, all the actions that they take are important. It's not just a matter of words, but it's a matter of actions. I think if we do that, we will have that true Eucharistic revival that many of these bishops truly want. And of course, I know all of us Catholics want as well. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up there. Until next time, everybody, God love you.